Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Show tapes live some Thursdays on YouTube, channels A and N Zach. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. We've got a special episode in the glamorous AnCast studios.
It's so nice in here.
In our apartment.
Except there's a Garzy's wing on your shelf.
Yeah. The Berserk's down there, too. I am joined by the two professionals, legendary, I would say, dub directors and writers and casters and all these things. It's Mike Sitter, Nicholas, and Stephanie Shea, NYAV Post. They're here.
Hi!
Hey!
Thank you so much for coming.
I can't believe it's been this long.
Yeah, it's been a while. Oh, so, fun story. This show started in your studio in Burbank. We taped the first, like, couple episodes.
Oh, yeah.
True story.
Yeah. Five or six episodes out there in that little room. It was, like, me and Justin in there. I still weighed, like, 300 and some pounds. So it was me and Justin crammed into this little room taping it. But, yeah, thank you so much for letting us do that all those years ago.
Yeah, but pleasure.
Things have changed quite a bit since then. And now y'all are, like, this is just my perception. I feel like NYAV Post has gone from kind of, you know, they also do dubs. Like, y'all just did another esteemed production house, I would say, to now y'all are handling the prestige stuff. So if there's something nominated for an Oscar, if there's an anime nominated for an Oscar, odds are you two are the ones who handle the dub. Like, it feels like that's the direction you're headed. You handled your name. Now you got this Slew Over the Wall, which I just saw. You're both handling Fooly Cooly 2 and 3. That's like the biggest project of the year, easily. And next week, Batman Ninja comes out. That's you as well. It's nuts.
It's nice.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, how it this just exploded. Is my perception incorrect?
I hope your perception is correct.
Yeah.
I will say this, that, like, this is Stephanie. Not like you're going to get Michael and I confused. But,
I mean, you could get us confused in your name, but.
But I think that it's nice that this kind of is, like, it's kind of built to this, but I think that, like, Michael's philosophy has always been creative and quality over everything else.
Right.
And so Michael's always been kind of a boutique studio.
That's a good way to put it.
And it's been a real challenge because monetarily, just to be honest, it's not the easiest way to go.
Yeah.
And even, like, we're really picky about our writers and our directors and our actors. And we don't have as many projects coming through our doors in the year as some of these other studios that are churning out, like, series after series after series. Mm-hmm. And so I know in the past that, like, I know I've heard through the grapevine that some actors will be like, oh, they don't like me because they don't cast me and stuff, or they don't, you know. But the truth of the matter is, like, we only have a handful of shows, which means
right.
a handful of roles, which means there's so, like, the last thing that I cast, I received over 700 auditions. So just the odds are, you know,
yeah.
like, it's really tough. It's really competitive. And I think the same thing with writers and directors. And in the past, Michael and I used to do everything ourselves. And it was really, really difficult because
yeah.
you just have a really, and I'd like to say high standard, but I don't want to insult anyone. So I don't know if it's so much that as it's like a specific vision.
Right.
So it now we're learning to kind of find more people and find our peeps and finding out, like, who's good for what, and then learning to kind of delegate.
And train up, yeah.
Because I'm getting old.
And I'm getting old faster because I am older. and you're trying to catch up, but it's not how math works. No, that's really well put. It's actually really interesting to hear someone else talk about what I've been doing for so long. Yeah, quality at the expense of everything else, personal health, happiness,
and
money. Like, I mean, as you know, we were all in New York when I started this, and I was working for mostly clients who didn't pay their bills.
Yeah.
So I got really good at getting efficient and being a one-man band back then. And but what drew me to anime actually was being a fan that went through classical theater and a number of like conservatory programs, went to that Fame High School in New York, and then went to a classical theater conservatory in North Carolina. And I loved anime the whole time, and I always wondered why the dubs just sounded poor. I didn't understand why the basics...
Which ones, exactly? Which ones, Mike?
I just got the sense that on the most dubs that I saw, whether they were anime or live action, that things, the people didn't sound like they were talking to each other.
Yeah.
Or they had a specific history to the character. And there was a lot of, you know, like what you call result-oriented acting, where I'm going to sound angry or I'm going to sound cute. One of the analogies I tend to make is, if your kid runs into the street and almost gets run over, maybe you will yell at them. But are you angry at them? The direction might be, yell, be more angry. But that's not what's going on there. There's a whole level of complexity to being terrified your kid almost got murdered.
My dad would have been mad at me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're so stupid. You're not my son.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just tried to bring basically the fundamentals of acting and storytelling to dubbing, which can too often be treated like painting by numbers.
Yeah.
Just hitting that result.
And yet... You're also known, I would say, for speed and that sort of one-man band efficiency. That must be where that comes from, because you like I've seen you at various stages during a project, and you look like you're half dead from the burning the candle at both ends to get something done very quickly.
I should have been a goth,
but you weren't. There was never a goth face. No, I cannot see you as a goth.
I don't think I have enough style. I always thought goth was super cool. And
you're wearing black right now.
I'm wearing a black free Adult Swim T-shirt. Thanks, Adult Swim, for the free T-shirt. Not because I had any style or sense to go buy one.
What I'm saying is like that speed and that efficiency must have come from that scrappiness, like needing to do it all on your own. But eventually, it became too much. So it's good to hear that. Now you're able to delegate?
We're still working on it.
Yeah.
It's a work in progress.
Because, more staff?
Yeah, we are staffing up for sure. We have a bunch of great new people in New York.
And we've had, like, we've had Clark who helps us out, and we've had him for a while, and he's been really, really great. But we're getting more staff, too. And also we're getting more writers, like Amanda and Christian, and I'm trying to think who else more recently on stuff.
Joe Deasy is an old friend that I did a Cartoon Network primetime show with called Robotomy. He was co-creator of that, and he's a genius writer, and so he's been really helpful for some of the bigger projects that he punch up on things. We worked on Letter to Momo and Phantom Boy. Did he work on Zucchini at all?
No, Christian wrote Zucchini.
Yeah. But he's been great, and we're working together on something now, and He's been an incredible person to start things off. He's not a sync writer, so we'll do a pass on that afterwards. But he is incredible for like
Bird
structure
Boy.
And
oh, he, Bird he Boy, worked yeah, on Bird Boy,
right? Yeah, y'all do a lot of work with G Kids, not just anime, but dubbing, family films and animated stuff from other countries. Is the process on that stuff the same, or is, anime a little still, like, does it feel different?
I'd say the process is the same, but I think the sensibilities are pretty different.
Okay.
I mean, my fundamental rule is I want our local audience to have the same experience as the original audience, right?
Right.
So I think there are certain tropes in anime that sometimes need to be honored, and I think sometimes need to be... really adapted.
Right.
So it doesn't feel stiff or translate-y or dubby.
Sure.
It's a lot easier, I think, to do something from French or Spanish. The cultural differences aren't quite the same, and it doesn't look as different when those characters speak in English. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
I just want to say something about G-Kids. Like, as a distributor, like, everybody who works there from the top down cares creatively about what they pick up and what they put out. So I think it's been a great working relationship because as a company, they found a company that basically cares as much to bend over backwards and do whatever it takes to get where it needs to be.
Right.
You know? So I think that for the G-Kids projects, there is extra care and attention. I think we've worked with them for ever since Me and the Magoo, which it's been a long, long journey. And so now we know each other better and we kind of streamlined our process. But I remember back in the old days, you know, an ADR script, first of all, I would have to scratch the entire film, which means I'm doing voices for every single character in the entire film. And that's how they would review it. But now they're kind of able to just review the script.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, it's like wrapping their heads around, like, how is this going to sound in that person's mouth? And da 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 da. And we would go through easily back then, like, 5 to 6 drafts of the ADR script before settling on something, and have like meetings and meetings about the script and about the story and what works and what doesn't work. And now we're not at that many drafts.
Yeah.
There's still multiple drafts, but it's a lot. It's a lot fewer, and we've streamlined the process. But so I think a lot of these like higher tier titles that G-Kids has, one of the things that G-Kids is really, that really matters to them is the fact that the experience is like the experience of what someone would feel if they were seeing the film in the original language. But also working for like a Western sensibility and a Western audience without dumbing down things,
right,
or the things that are charming about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And to that end, I think we've gotten a lot of really positive feedback from the creators. I know on Ernest and Celestine, the producer who also worked on Secret of Kells and Triple to Belleville had said like, oh, I did not, he literally said, I did not think it was possible to have such an intelligent dub of this movie.
You almost went into an accent there.
I almost did, because
I wanted you to keep going.
He's
with
got
it.
A very specific way of speaking. And he's very funny, but he seems stoic. But he's hilarious.
Yeah.
And then he invited me to his home.
Oh, so that's exciting.
When I'm in Paris again, maybe I'll stop in and say, "Hey,
that's
man,
exciting.
Bonjour, Didier." But then, and we just got that premiering Lou at Sundance with Yuasa-san.
Like, right.
Yeah.
That
well,
was in January.
We should probably talk about Lou Over the Wall.
Yeah.
Since that is ostensibly what you're here to discuss. So, you've handled this new Misaki Yuasa film. Did you watch Devilman Crybaby? That's sort of my first question. Neither of you watched it.
I've heard so many good things about it, but I have not watched it yet.
I'm sure people bring it up immediately when you say Lou Over the Wall. Okay, just putting that out there.
He actually, in one of our Q&As, said, please, to this young audience who enjoyed Lou Over the Wall, if you love this movie,
do not
see Devilman
Crybaby. Do not. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. You have to be at least 47 to watch that show, I think.
But all the feedback that I've gotten from people who've seen it, it's so positive and so I can't wait to see it, but I just haven't had the time yet.
So what was your first impression of Lou Over the Wall? Like, what did you think of it when you first saw it?
My first impression was that there's something so specific about what Yuasa does.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of anime for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there are archetypes and tropes and things that they can fall into sort of a groove, right?
Yeah.
A familiarity. I still push myself on anything I direct or act in to not just fall back to, oh, I've been this kind of hero before. Let me go roll that voice back in. But that's...
Let me bust out the vampire lord again.
And just here
pull
we
it out of that box.
With that old Dracula.
Yeah.
But I always want to push myself to find some more specificity, and I think that usually does exist in every title. And you must task yourself as a director, a writer, and an actor to find what's different about it. But on the surface, all the Yuasa stuff just immediately feels fresh and weirdly familiar, but not because I've seen it in an anime, because I feel like I know these people. Each of these three leads, these kids, like, feel like someone I know specifically. But they feel like a melange of, like, you know, like, your character seems like Miho.
Yuho.
She's not Miho. Yeah, sort of the sprightly, energetic town mascot, almost.
Self-centered.
Yeah.
Like, self-centered, which seems bad, but also really charming, which seems good. But, like, all these things exist at the same time.
Yeah.
And two things can be true at once.
Yeah, his characters are all very layered.
Yeah.
There's a lot of layers to him, I think. Even in this one, which is a family film, very much.
I the first time I saw this movie was at the Animationist Film Festival.
Yeah.
That G-Kids put on. Because G-Kids runs a New York Children's Film Festival in, Or do they still run it? I don't know. But they,
well, they're associated with
yeah.
Now they're associated
the festival,
with,
yeah.
Yeah.
But in New York, and so they did this film festival, I think, in November of last
yeah.
year.
Yeah, it's usually when it happens. Yeah.
I think that was that the first year? That was the first year, right?
Was it?
The second year?
I wish I knew this stuff off the top of my head.
It was the first year.
I want to say it was the second year, but it was the first one that I was aware of. It might be the first.
They were heavily involved in the New York Children's yeah. Film Festival for a long time, and yes. I think this is like a spin-off event or a different event or
this
something.
This is a different event,
yeah,
definitely.
Okay. But you saw it there.
But I saw it there, so with an audience, and then like any good film festival, you have your little paper ballots.
Right.
Like Sundance, you have that too. You like yeah. mark the number, how much did you like it, what's your favorite, blah, blah, blah. And this movie was my favorite movie that I saw.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good.
The way it made me feel happy.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't even matter what was going on. It made me feel so happy. And I was, when people asked, I was like, oh, because I saw a bunch of films at that film festival. They're like, what was your favorite? And da, 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 and was like, honestly, Lou was my favorite. I was like, I don't care if it's not the best film.
Yeah.
It's my favorite film because it just, the way it made me feel.
Yeah.
You know? And the music is so catchy.
Yeah.
So catchy.
It's really, it is. So you re-recorded that, right? Some of those songs, they didn't start out in English? I haven't seen it in subtitle. I've only seen your version.
No, so, none of the songs are in English.
So okay. The songs are the same. We didn't rewrite the music. We
okay.
wrote the lyrics.
That's what I meant.
We re-recorded.
You re-recorded the songs.
Yes.
Okay.
There's only one song that was not re-recorded. I mean, sorry, that makes it sound good. The song itself was re-recorded, but one version of it that's played in the film is not re-recorded, and that's in Japanese.
Okay.
Because he's looking at it on YouTube.
Right, yes.
So,
yeah.
So I guess he's playing the Japanese version. And actually, right. I thought originally that that particular song, because there's multiple songs in the movie, that I thought that that song was, I thought that all these songs were written for the movie, but that song in particular actually already exists.
Right.
So even when the movie was made, I think that song already existed.
Yes. And we actually recorded, because for a second we thought it was my character's dad who was singing it, because he had a band.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually recorded that actor doing the whole song, and then we just didn't get to use it.
Oh. So that'll be on the Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
Well, so when you first saw it, were you like, or when you got the gig, did you think they were going to ask you to re-record the songs? Because that you have experience with this. Sometimes they ask you to do that, sometimes they don't. Like, if you're playing characters who were in a band, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get to sing the songs.
I think, if I recall correctly, before they picked the movie up, I think Dave reached out to me and, like, either sent me a trailer or clips of the songs and then asked me if I thought the movie was dubbable and
yeah,
you know, oh yeah, that's right. I remember that.
But this is yeah. this was like year this is way before. So this is before any sort of you're working on this or any guarantees.
Right.
He was sometimes they'll be like, watch this. We might be picking it up. What do you think? You
yeah,
know, like just
sure.
your opinion, your
yeah.
professional opinion. And I think what I told them was I think, yeah, it's totally dubbable. And I also said I think that you should dub it because it's the characters that are singing.
Yeah.
It's
story information.
Exactly. It's
yeah.
not like something playing in the background or whatnot. And
yeah.
especially in this movie, they have dialogue and they're like in rehearsal. So it'd be weird.
Yeah, that would have been really weird. Yeah.
You know, unfortunately for when I did K-On.
Right. That's what I was thinking is
what happened. They
right.
left all the songs in Japanese and K-On. And then I think as an extra, they had there were English versions. As extra, we recorded English versions, but it never appeared in the anime. And there was even a section when they were rehearsing.
Right.
But we had to, because, you know, they couldn't lift the Japanese, so we had to sing phonetically
right.
Japanese.
Yeah.
Just for those little bits and parts. And I just think it takes away from the audience's enjoyment
yeah.
of it.
Well, plus you got to sing.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It's a weird question, though. Like, does keeping the song in Japanese make it more authentic or more weird and break the illusion?
It's story information. So you said the point is to have the same experience as if you're watching it in its native language. Well, if I'm watching this in English and the song is in Japanese, but there's thematic information in there, it's layering themes and narrative information into the story. It's adding to the scene. It's important that I understand it. So yeah, you should definitely do that, I think.
I mean, I think
IMO.
if the characters were, like, speaking half Japanese and half English, it'd be one thing.
Yeah.
I think if the character's only speaking English and suddenly they're singing in Japanese, as an audience member, for me, it takes me out of it.
Yeah, we just went through this on another really quirky film for G-Kids as well called Satellite Girl and Milk Cow.
Okay, yes.
That was a Korean film, and but it's actually about a musician whose song reaches out into space, and then the first Korean satellite, South Korean satellite, to be put into space is at the end of its life cycle. It hears the music, and it wakes something up in its soul, and it comes to Earth to find where the music came from. And then it gets crazier and crazier and crazier. It's a really kind of amazing. I think it just dropped on VRV.
Yeah.
But you know, we had the whole debate about, well, we have to redo the music because it's his music that is the catalyst for this entire story. Mm-hmm. He's a musician writing his music that no one else cares about except for her, the satellite. And then, so we had to redo it. But then we had to sort of redo original music based on the music that was there, but we didn't have a license to get their music to dub it, and we didn't have the instrumental version, so that's the whole thing. So Lou was easier. But the question Dave had was, this Little Mermaid character has a weird voice, and it sounds kind of synthy, and do we redo that or not? So that was and actually getting to hang out with Yuasa a lot at Sundance, after he saw the film and then was very happy about it, and said it felt like his movie.
Good. That's very satisfying.
That was super satisfying. Yeah. Especially for a creator like him, who's so quirky and creative.
It was actually interesting because there were several screenings at Sundance, but we didn't actually sit down and watch it.
Okay.
Like, we would come in and do the intro and then, like, do the Q&A.
Yeah.
So they never watched the dub until the very last screening. They actually sat down and watched it. So, like, the whole entire week and stuff, it was all very kind of polite and, you know, very polite and just, like, not... And then after the last screening...
Relief.
Because then it was, like, at that dinner, then people were, like, actually talking and bonding and stuff, I think, because maybe there was, you know, like, you just didn't know what to make of this group of people that, like, dubbed your project, you know?
Yeah. That's really exciting.
And they answered all kinds of... He's got a lot of history for each little weird, quirky moment about that movie.
Yeah.
It was really cool to ask him, like, why was this going on?
You have the whole... You understand this movie completely, front.
After we finished recording it, yeah.
Right.
But there are things, that, like, little hints of things that I got a clue to, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to double down on this, and as I direct it, tell the actors, this is the story. And most of that was right. A couple things I wasn't totally aware of, like the situation with dog shelters in Japan, that was interesting. I learned a lot about that. That's
right.
And then, and actually, the reason that their Lou sounds like a Vocaloid is because she was a 13-year-old little seiyu who was very shy about her ability or inability to sing.
Okay.
So they sampled her and played it back. But they didn't try to make it sound real. In fact, there's a couple of moments where she sings on top of herself. And they, like, use a lot of bend and modulation. So it sounds very synthy, but it's really cute. In our case, and that was a real debate that I had about how we should redo the song.
Yeah.
Christine Marie Cabanos, who's amazing, can just do it with her mouth. Like, there's all kinds of processing to make it sound a little garbly, and it's sort of like a fake underwater, but she's not underwater, you know, like gill sound. So there's a little bit of processing, but minimal. And she can just sing it like a Vocaloid. She even kind of sounds auto-tuned. And I made her do it at every Q&A in Sundance. And when the producers and Yuasa first heard it, they were just like, their jaws dropped and were like, huh?
Wow.
That's just a microphone.
That's super cool. I mean, so you did have to sing in character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
which is why we're not singing a lot better, because we're incredible singers.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
that's
you know,
why.
How much is that, like, an extra challenge at this point? I mean, you're a legend in this whole industry. I mean, I can't imagine a whole lot still seems intimidating to you, but that must be singing in character must be super tough.
I think singing is always intimidating.
Yeah.
I actually think singing in character is a little bit easier than just straight singing, because if you're just singing, it's got to sound beautiful and perfect, but yet emotional, and not, you're not thinking about each note. If you're singing in character, there's a little bit more leeway because there's certain things you have to do.
I see what you're saying.
So the only time that singing in character is difficult is when the song is not written for that character voice.
Okay.
Like, for example, if you're doing a very, like, high-pitched kind of, you know, voice, and then the song is really low, it's hard to create that same character sound in that if it's singing, if it's too low, you know, like.
So if Yuho was singing like Metallica, you would be like, I don't know what to do with this.
Well, I could probably just sing it.
Just go.
Let's like,
in the character,
Master
right?
Puppets, could
but
you,
it's
like,
more
months?
Like, let's say if you wrote a very operatic song,
yeah.
And like the notes were very high,
right.
But like you were doing like this kind of like tough raspy voice. It's hard to create that sound,
yeah.
When the notes are, you know, like it. So it's just
that's
that kind of. That's every once in a while that'll happen.
Right.
If for someone who's not like. Not aware of like writing the music to kind of the character voice, but like this was not an issue at all.
Yeah, totally.
I think I had an easier time directing you to sing than you did directing me to sing. I remember we finished Kai's last song,
well,
and then went back to do it again because he's like coming out of a shell and he's got to dig deep and find a reason to sing, and then there's parts that are sort of struggling and trying, and then parts where. He sort of lets himself sing.
Of course, because for me, Yuho is not a great singer. They talk about how she's like not that great. She's a little bit pitchy. Like
yeah.
She's good enough.
Sure,
that,
yeah.
She's good enough that probably like she's like the best singer amongst her friends karaoke. But like,
yeah.
You know, like she's good amateur. But like if she wants to be a real singer in a band, like it, she's not really. It's like a little.
Not quite there.
Yeah. You know, she's like probably like the girl who, like. In the local town that's like, oh, she's such a great singer, but then when she goes to like American Idol, she'll
just eats it, yeah.
She's not gonna she'll like maybe make it, maybe she'll go to Hollywood, but then she's not gonna make it past
yeah.
very many rounds.
Like, yeah. We got a good look. Maybe we can do something with that.
But
yeah.
like for Michael, you had to like I mean his song is like the emotional climax of the movie. So there it's much harder. Like it kind of has to sound good. You know,
yeah.
And it has to sound emotional, and it's very high for a man.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
It's much harder.
Your character, I mean, it not that you haven't played characters like that before, but it is not your usual energy. Like, the character is very, you know, Yuasa cares a lot about the depiction of these emotions, and he's so careful to depict this character as a very specific type of depressed. Even the character animation and everything, of course, it's very specific, like the way he kind of slumps down the stairs and things like that. I thought you nailed it. Did it take you a while to get into that space, or does that just come naturally to you?
Yeah, the tricky thing is I'm pretty bubbly, but I think that brand of depression, specifically it's depression, it's not sadness, it's not melancholy so much.
Yeah,
it's like it's more the, you know, the absence of feeling, not the presence of sadness.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of really thrown away stuff that we talked a lot and worked hard at to get right. That's thrown away, you know. That's like I don't care.
Yeah.
That's not like mom left me. You know.
Yeah.
It's I don't care. And to really play I don't care to the point where he can be callous unintentionally and hurt, you know, Yuho's feelings. He can just sort of like ignore his dad but not make a scene. I don't know this. It's really specific, but again, anything that would be a trap or a challenge, Yuasa laid out so clearly and beautifully. But you know, trying to serve that takes a little longer, and it's a good thing that like we got to do this. Actually, I really think working on your name really helped us get the flavor of this town right. Also, because it's there, you know, Itomori happens
yeah.
in this sort of imagined like country town. This little towny fishing village, I think, had a really specific flavor.
Yeah,
and to me, felt like a fun. Energy in place, like the office chair race scene and
yeah.
the whole interaction and the way people gossip and the way people know each other and the enthusiasm people have and the, oh, I remember when your dad was dating your mom and they tried to move out to the city and become a dancer. And
yeah.
I really wanted to make the town feel like a place where people had been there for a long time and it wasn't just hickey, it was towny and familial and colloquial and even like a cool, nice energy, like a fun place, a safe place, and a place where a little bit of like mermaid racism can exist. But
right.
there are bad guys. I mean, they're good people on both sides of the argument about
yeah,
mermaids.
Sure.
Oh, what have I done? What was the question again? Oh yeah, but we had very little time to do this. I mean, something like 3 weeks. We got the call.
You had 3 weeks.
Thanksgiving.
Basically, what happened? Yeah, we got the call around Thanksgiving. And I think the reason why we had so little time is because Sundance has their Sundance Kids, part of it, and they've been doing for a couple of years. And then G Kids has, you know, has a good relationship with Sundance. And G Kids, I think, sent them their roster of, like, these are the films we have.
Yeah.
You know, that maybe you want to pick one for Sundance. And they came back and said, we would like to show Lou.
Mm.
And because when they do Sundance Kids, the audience is a lot of kids.
Yeah.
They tend to show the English language version. So Sundance is in January. And November. So
wow.
It was basically, I think, Dave saying, hey, do you want to, like, can you do this? Because we want to premiere the dub at Sundance. But if you want to, you know, it has to be done in this compressed amount of time. So
also, don't forget, there are holidays coming up.
Yeah, so, right. Did you deliver this before Christmas?
I only got to...
I don't remember.
My family's in France. Calendar. I got to go there, and I was only there for like a day and a half, and then came right back to finish. So yeah. I think we were done recording, but I have to mix.
That's... Wow. That's... Well, I in my opinion, you managed to put together an incredibly natural-sounding dub. I was pretty taken with how natural the performances were and how much you really sold the feeling of it. I was pretty impressed with it. And for the adaptive script, did you bring someone in or did you handle that yourself?
It was Amanda C. Miller,
okay.
who is the voice of Sailor Jupiter,
right?
Sailor Moon.
I knew I'd heard that name before.
we're friends with,
and we had just worked together on this incredible series. I know it's not Japanese; it's French. But it's a dub series. It's called the French anime, and the series is called Last Man.
Right. Yes. Of course.
It's on VRV. I love that.
I've heard many good things.
Go watch it. It is so good. So good. And Amanda did a fantastic job of that script. It's so not a kid's thing.
Yeah.
It's just hip and cool and like it's so cool. But anyways, Amanda has worked on this script, and then I went through and I kind of just punched it up, and I wrote.
Yeah.
I did the song lyrics.
Okay.
She did like the bulk of it, you know. But she had such a compressed amount of time. There's a few things we added, some humor and stuff. Like one of my favorite things that she added that I don't even know if you can hear it because it's mixed down intentionally. But on the announcements, they have announcements about learning.
I love the delivery on that.
And the da 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 da. And one of them says something about. One of the announcements in Japanese, like you could hear in the background, but I think you could, because you couldn't make it out, there was no translation form.
Yeah.
So then Amanda just like had to keep writing something. And at some point she's talking about the fish processing workshops, you know, and she was like, she goes, lunch will be served. And then she'd say, there are no vegetarian or meat options. Only fish. that's like, it's in there, but it's towards the end and it's really buried, but that always, like, that makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah, the delivery on those, that was great. The way they're waiting for the echo to stop and then they deliver the next couple, it just gives it this hilarious kind of staccato rhythm that's really funny.
And then that becomes like a challenge later on when you have to make emergency announcements and
yeah.
you gotta like, take your time.
Yeah,
wait
yeah.
for the delay.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. That's good.
That was one of the funnest things to mix in that. I also had no time to mix it.
Of course,
so
right.
So I ran back and was like, and tried to copy what they did and make sense of it.
We did finish recording before Christmas.
Yes.
So for you didn't have much time to cast either.
Printmaster was on January 8th.
Oh, geez. Okay. Yeah. And they called you on Thanksgiving to dub this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... for casting, what is that process usually like? Like, how do you two cast something together?
We send out auditions.
Yeah, the first thing is we, because NYV Post is still bi-coastal, we are able to cast from New York and LA talent.
So we send out auditions to New York and LA, and then I gather them all, and then I listen. I generally, myself, listen to every single one, and then I... several times, and I put them in categories, and then I give like a top. I try to limit to 5,
yeah.
But sometimes it ends up being top 12.
Okay, yeah.
And then
top 12.
Yeah.
Well, I honestly think that the audition process is often overlooked. Like it's an obstacle to getting to the record, but it's also where I believe as a director it's where you get to prototype your characters and see how all the ideas that you put down in the description
Yeah, you can work that stuff out.
When the rubber meets the road, right? And there's more than one way for it to be interpreted. So we won't just do like, well, these guys were good and this is our narrow vision of what the character should be. We're like, you know what? The character could go this way too.
Mm-hmm.
And then with any G-Kids project, G-Kids pretty much has final say on stuff. So we give them, by the time it gets to G-Kids, I think they get about three to five choices. And then they give their opinion. And they pretty much pick.
Yeah.
There's only on occasion where we'll weigh in saying like, oh, this, you didn't consider this about this actor or this about, you know, like this person can't really sing or this, like whatever, you know? So that's, and sometimes we have callbacks and sometimes we don't have callbacks. So,
did we call back Brandon on this one?
I don't think we did. I don't think we can call back Brandon. Yeah. Because his audition was good.
Yeah.
And I know at some point Dave had me, liked me for both Lou and Yuho.
And then
he had asked me, he's like, do you think you could do both?
Yeah.
And I said, I don't think that's a good idea because it's too similar. Like,
yeah. It might have been kind of confusing too. Like, because that could intend to mean something thematically. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, way that like,
I've seen dubs do that, and it was very
confusing. And you're like, are you trying to draw a connection
why is
between
the girlfriend, the same voice actress as the mom?
Yeah, yeah. Am I supposed to notice that?
I was like, I don't think that's a good idea. And then ultimately, he ended up picking Christine, but I think that's the best choice anyway.
Yeah, like, we were super strong team. You know, Christine Marie Cabanas, because like it's her,
And I know that she can sing.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing about Christine. I think that Christine has a YouTube channel where she like sings covers of stuff, and it's like it's got a decent amount of followers. But like for other voice actors who sing, she's not really known for singing.
Mm.
But I shit you not, sorry.
It's all right. Yeah. You can swear on the show.
But like Christine is such a great singer,
yeah.
And I think that she's just like underappreciated. Like people don't. I mean, she's not. She's so humble. Like she doesn't really promote herself in that way. People don't know her for her singing.
Yeah, that's true.
But you should go and go on her YouTube channel and listen to her stuff because she is such a beautiful, adorable, cute voice, and she's on key, which I can't say for other fan YouTube cover people, you know?
Yeah, really. Yeah,
I mean, she's really, really good. So I knew that, like, she would be great at that. I didn't know that she could do that weird Vocaloid-y thing with her singing, but, you know, it was just meant to be, I feel like.
Yeah, totally. So how do you cast yourselves? Like, obviously, G-Kids is still picking.
We usually don't.
We usually don't cast ourselves.
In fact, I usually bristle at it and say, like, I don't think I'm right for this, but then someone else makes me read for it. I mean, that happened in your name, too.
So for this one, Michael was submitted along with other people, you know, and then G-Kids ended up picking.
Right.
So, and then that's usually the process. I don't think I think it's because there's that kind of stigma and fear, even among myself, with myself, it's like, I think people focus on like the directing and the acting, because that's like the sexy parts.
Right.
But I think like for a good dub, what is super, super important is the writing and the casting.
Yeah.
But people kind of overlook that part.
Right.
Because if you have the right cast and your script is good, the acting and the directing is much easier.
It'll fall into place. Yeah.
And
like,
so
these things can compensate for each other, but people don't give enough credit to this part. Yeah.
And I think we never want to be the person who, you know, who just casts themselves.
Yeah.
Especially if it's not.
It doesn't seem like it doesn't
also
seem like
right.
Super, super from the beginning, believe in the collaborative process of having
it seems like
a director's ideas and an actor's ideas. I don't believe in line reading because you're just forcing your idea and your music on someone else's thought. If you do get to collaborate, you can get their ideas, your ideas, and then something can come of that that's greater than either of you could have done alone.
Yeah.
And if you're self-directing and acting, like, you can't do that. There's no opportunity for it. And the problem with this, coming from a classical background, is there's no process. You show up with a script and go. And that's all there is. There's no iteration. There's no development. And that's what's really, really hard, and I think what is sort of a glass ceiling on a lot of dubs.
Mm.
So that's why, like, we spend a lot more time in casting, a lot more time looking over the script, whether or not we have the time, you know, which is where the working too hard comes in. But like,
well, I think it pays off. I think it pays off. It really does. It, in my opinion, it pays off. So how do you handle disagreements when you disagree?
Zach's asking the tough questions. That's a,
you know what? It varies from project to project. When we did Your Name,
yeah, we had a good solution.
We had a really good solution. Yeah. So if she was being herself, then she could veto my choice.
Right.
If she was being my character, if my character had possessed her, then I could veto her choice.
Okay, I'm so like, you're saying, well, my no, because this is actually my character, so you have to follow my lead here.
Yes.
I'm making the choices for this character that is just happens to currently be inhabiting your body.
Yes. Yeah, when you're a woman...
Totally normal.
When I'm a man, let me mansplain totally what a man would do.
Yeah.
And right. When you're a woman, you can woman... When I'm a woman, you can woman-splain what I'm going to do.
Because I'd be like, no, I would not... She would not say it that way.
Yeah.
You know, like it.
I'm like, but wouldn't you... Okay, no, you're right.
Yeah.
I get no say.
You can get real insistent.
But I think... Yeah, we have disagreements, but...
Yeah.
We'll have to talk it through a lot. We tend to talk it through a lot. I think, you know, with this character for Kai... Sometimes Michael really thought, like, is that too mean? I think that's too mean. Or, like, oh, that's not enough energy. Or that's not, you know, like... So I usually let him have another take at it.
Yeah.
Then I'll play it back, and then I'll be like, nope. Or I'll be like, okay. You know, so I think, if anything, when we're directing each other, it takes so much longer. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much more, like, second-guessing.
And we would never sass another director the way we sass each other.
Sure, like, yeah, right, yeah.
Like, we'd never be like, no, wait, hold on, I don't agree, because blah, blah, you're not going to have that conversation with the director.
Right, yeah. okay, before we wrap, I would be remiss, and y'all are handling Fooly Cooly.
Yeah.
Two and three?
Yeah, progressive and alternative.
When did you get that?
We talked about it a couple of years ago. Well,
you've been talking to them for years about it?
Well, okay, here's... It seems like a coup.
Yeah,
like,
I mean...
Like, we got to work on this.
I think it seems normal because you did
not
the
original. It doesn't seem like a coup. It's just... It's so good and cool.
But the truth of the matter is that, like, I worked on... I produced the original
plan. Yeah, right.
So Maki really wanted to get as much of the original team
of course
together... The original translator, Shizuki, is translating.
Yeah, yeah.
So
getting the team back together.
The only person that is missing is Mark Handler, who directed the original.
Right.
Mark Handler has moved to China.
Oh, really?
And because this is one of those situations where, you know, like back in the day, anime would be completed.
Yeah.
And then you would dub it.
Yeah.
And now that's not the case.
Yeah.
And so, I mean... We had conversations of, like, how would it... Not with Mark, but internally, we talked about how could we bring Mark in? Would he be willing... Should we ask him if he's willing to fly in for however much time? But production schedules keeps changing.
Yeah.
And then because there's, like, multiple drafts of the script and then references, and it just ultimately was going to be too difficult for somebody to, like, come... We didn't ask him because it was
right
too complicated.
Yeah.
So
you gotta move forward on the project at some point.
Yeah, and seriously, there's been a lot of changes in the schedule, and I mean, we're recording on Monday the next batch of episodes, and I'm still writing them.
Okay.
And it's Friday afternoon.
I better let you get back to it.
So that's kind of the pace of how we have to do it.
So what's in these scripts that you're writing?
I will die.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm so excited for that and so excited to see it. I think you guys have just been doing incredible work, and congratulations on all your success. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, that's our show. My enormous and profound thanks to Mike and Stephanie for stopping by. Lou Over the Walls in theaters May 11th, which is right now, so go check it out. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. Leave us comments and ratings. It really helps us out when you do that. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you all next week.